I'm David Brown, and no matter where you are, all together now, it's Texas Standard Time on this Monday, December 7th, the day which will live in infamy, said Franklin Delano Roosevelt. On this date in 1941, few in Washington, much less the nation, imagined that a tiny string of islands with oversized imperial ambitions inexorably linked to religion, by the way, could strike so close and with such devastating power. December 6th, 2015, is no date that will live in infamy. It's likely not to be anyway, though it may be remembered by historians as the date the 44th U.S. president tried to allay the growing fears of a nation and talk tough against terror. Dispensing with the fuzzy rhetoric of degrading terrorist groups, President Obama last night vowed to, quote, destroy ISIL and any other organization that tries to harm us, his words. He unambiguously tagged last week's shooting in San Bernardino an act of terrorism designed to kill innocent people and spoke against what he called a perverted form of Islam. We will prevail, he pledged. It was his toughest language yet, from the Oval Office, no less. A setting used by past presidents for moments of high consequence, many of which are now remembered as turning points in the modern American narrative.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Turn back. It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body.
We will never forget them, nor the last time we saw them, this morning, as they prepared for their journey and waved goodbye and slipped the surly bonds of earth.
What we saw last night and the night before in Los Angeles is not about civil rights. It's not about the great cause of equality that all Americans must uphold.
As such, the Iraqi attack against President Bush was an attack against our country and against all Americans. We could not and have not let such action against our nation go unanswered.
A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America.
Last night's address was only the third time the Oval Office has been used by President Obama, a point hardly lost on historian and author H.W. Brand, senior chair in history at the University of Texas at Austin. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
Do you think last night's Oval Office speech was one of those turning point speeches?
Well, as with every speech by a president, the question of whether it's a turning point depends on what happens next. So presidential speeches are not important in and of themselves. They're important for what they signify and what follows. Now, if in fact there is a more concerted campaign against ISIS, and if it leads to success, then people, historians like me, will look back on this and say, this is the moment when things changed. But in fact, one of the striking things about this speech was that President Obama tried to reassure Americans, tried to reassure Americans, first of all, that the government, the executive branch, the government of the United States was taking all actions necessary to defend them.
Right.
But he didn't announce anything new. This was not like Franklin Roosevelt after Pearl Harbor, where it was really clear what to do. And that what's going to happen is very different from what has gone before.
He set out to do something else, though, did he not? He set out to calm fears.
Well, that's the problem. He had to do two things. He had to sound tough and aggressive against ISIS, but at the same time, he had to tell Americans that they really didn't have that much to fear. And that's a tough one. When you're trying to rev up the nation for a war effort, then you do want to sound the alarm. But on the other hand, this is not a war, and he made very clear that he doesn't intend to put troops on the ground. And so he's caught between trying to sound, well, to sound the alarm, but not sound alarmist.
Mm-hmm. I noticed a tweet from Joaquin Castro last night in which he expressed surprise that even though the major TV networks cut away for the president last night, there was no analysis afterwards and it went back to regularly scheduled programming. And it reminded me that primetime addresses by presidents are increasingly rare events. Why is that?
I think that in the first place, there's no triopoly by the major news networks the way there was. in Eisenhower's day, Kennedy's day, even down to Nixon's day. And there are just many more outlets. The other, and part of this is that it leads to a partisanization of the media. And so Fox News, which did cover it, but doesn't feel obliged to give it the kind of treatment that NBC and CBS and ABC did back in the older days.
So in a way, this says something more about the media than anything else. Did you draw anything from the fact that rather than sitting behind the Resolute desk, there was that lectern? Does that signify anything to you?
I think, I don't know quite what to make of it. I'm sure that there was some conscious decision behind it, but I don't know exactly what that was. Perhaps he didn't want to make it sound as though this is a war message, because it wasn't.
H.W. Brands is senior chair in history at the University of Texas at Austin, and making the point that we may not know what the significance of this address is until, we have the perspective of being able to look back on how history unfolds. Professor Brands, thank you very much for taking time to speak with us.
My pleasure.